Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The Mecklenburg County Commission has a lot on its plate. They're facing a mix of economic, social, and political challenges. Rapid growth and development has increased the demand for infrastructure, housing, and public services. The county also finds itself in the middle of a debate it believed had ended over the I-77 toll lanes. Mecklenburg first joined other area governments in rejecting NCDOT's proposal, but now, after threats to seek repayment of money already spent on the project, which were written into the state budget bill, some municipalities, including Mecklenburg, are reconsidering their opposition, and the deadline for that decision is looming. Meanwhile, hostility towards the proliferation of data centers is growing, and governments are studying whether it makes sense to provide incentives for those facilities or to withhold them. They're even considering whether or not they want them in their jurisdictions. Mecklenburg County's in the middle of a debate on that topic, too. The state budget finally passed, but it was a long time coming, and the county had to deal with that uncertainty even as it dealt with revenue shortages of its own. And then there are concerns about ongoing ICE operations and the federal government's unwillingness to cooperate with locals. Plus, the county health department recently came under investigation by the state for the death of a six-year-old. We're going to explore all those topics this hour with the chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission, Mark Jarrell, who also is the District 4 representative on that body. Welcome back to the program. Good morning.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning. Great to be here.
Let's start with the toll lanes. Mecklenburg County joined other members of the Charlotte Regional Transportation Planning Organization in withdrawing their initial support for those toll lanes as proposed by NCDOT. Take us back. Why did you reach the decision to withdraw that support?
Well, if you go back even further than where you're starting, we actually voted against the project from the very beginning.
Okay.
Yeah. So, our board voted when it was first presented, we voted against it. We were concerned about things like equity, who would have access. We didn't know all of the details that we know today, but we have maintained the same position that we started with. So our position certainly hasn't changed since the very beginning.
So to be clear, you voted against the you didn't support it from the beginning, meaning that you didn't support it even before you knew what the final plans were.
Absolutely.
Those who voted to reverse their support for the lanes were at first threatened with having to pay back something like $60 million, their weighted portion of that $60 million, which was used for the design of the project. And that threat caused the town of Monroe and Cornelius to change their minds. And now, thanks to Mecklenburg-Iredell Republican Senator Vicki Sawyer, that threat is law because it is written into the budget bill that just passed.
Right.
And members of the CRTPO are facing a deadline that I referred to reverse that decision. When this was first floated as an idea, the commission reaffirmed its opposition to a plan that you called a power grab. And in July, you said, our stance hasn't changed. You just said it again. We're going to continue to stand with the community. We're going to stand with making sure our community is connected. What does that mean, connected?
Well, it means a couple of things. If you take a historical look, when you had these issues of interstate highways they've divided communities. And so I think in this particular case, history matters. Particularly, they've impacted communities of color, communities that are socioeconomically disadvantaged that don't typically have a voice. We've divided communities. Certainly in the 21st century, we should be bringing communities together, not dividing communities. History matters. We need to take a page out of that book and figure out ways where we bring communities together. We don't displace people. We listen to residents. I think the rollout was a debacle. The rollout really did not provide the level of community engagement or transparency that was needed for us to make adequate decisions at the local level. And so we could not support from the very beginning.
NCDOT was proposing at one point, I guess they still are, a double-decker highway with the toll lanes on top of the regular lanes, and there were well, there was pushback to that because that would make an incursion into neighborhoods on the west side of town, on the west side of I-77, but also because of the noise and the ugliness they believe would happen as a result of having this big tall thing in their backyards, essentially. Some of those residents have suggested burying the whole thing. That's probably not going to happen because it's just cost prohibitive. But would and the idea would be to pave over the highway and make it a connecting into the, make it connect into uptown with parks and trails and things like that. Would the commission be in favor of that approach?
Well, I would say the short answer is yes. Any approach that does not displace, any approach that connects communities is something that we would certainly consider. We want to look at all of the implications, though. Again, what we're asking and what we've asked for, and our representative is Vice Chair Altman on CARPO. What we've asked repeatedly and what the community has asked for is an alternative analysis so that we can understand all of the options that may be available. This sort of piecemeal approach and it's not really working for the community. And so we think an alternatives analysis is needed. Let's see all of the options. Let's put them out there. And we need to have robust community engagement as we move forward. The process has to be transparent, but we're going to be open to any option that benefits the community. But one of the things that we're not going to do is, as we're thinking about I-77 and this 11-mile stretch and on this corridor, we're not going to prioritize people coming through the community over people that are actually in the community. Who's here matters, whether it's one person, 29 folks impacted, or 200. We're going to make sure that they have a voice at the table, and the county's not afraid to be that voice.
But now there is this threat that the individual members of CARTPO will have to be paying back their portion based on the weight of their vote of the $60 million. The city of Charlotte's votes account for, I think, 42% of the weighted total. So Charlotte will bear the brunt of this if this actually happens. What percentage does Mecklenburg County would they be responsible for, and how does that translate into how much of the $60 million you might have to pay back, and where would that money come from?
Yes, yeah, so that's a great question. And our percentage is much smaller. I mean, our weighted vote is we have three votes to the city's 31. So our proportion of the 60 million is much smaller. But again, it's something that's not budgeted. And so when you think about where it would come from, we would have to figure that out. But anytime you're talking about millions of dollars, that is millions of dollars that are probably committed to Health and Human Services, our park system, libraries, or our other statutory responsibilities. And so again, we take this very seriously. Frankly, I think some of the analysis from different legal folks don't even believe that this thing would pass legal muster. But we don't really want to go down that road. I mean, we should be working collaboratively. We should be able to cooperate with one another to produce the best outcomes. This approach is thinking about today. We need to be we need to be forward-thinking as it relates to the decisions that we're making for the community. And I think we're willing to work with our partners at the state, our partners at CARPO, and everyone else to find a solution that best fits this community.
So I take it that no one really knows the dollar figure this would be, should this come to pass. But money is already short at the county.
Absolutely.
Would we feel it? Would we notice it?
Well, I think anytime we're talking about millions of dollars, Mike, we certainly would feel it in some way. You're going to have to make adjustments to budget items. That's probably where funding has already been allocated, or and so when you think about it in those terms, we certainly would feel it. We'd have to rob Peter to pay Paul.
You and other officials in other jurisdictions have talked about the need to work together. You just talked about that a moment ago, and I think it's curious because, as I said, it was Senator Vicky Sawyer, who represents the northern part of Mecklenburg County and portions of Iredell County, who proposed the demand to have these entities pay back this money already spent, and she said that it was meant to be, quote, punitive. She opposed the toll lanes in the northern part of the county, the part of the county that she represents, but now she wants to punish areas that have achieved what she would like to have achieved had she been able to. Have you spoken to her about this?
No, I haven't spoken to Senator Sawyer. I've spoken to other members of our delegation, but not directly to Senator Sawyer.
Why not? Because if you want to work together, she'd be a good place to start.
You know, I've actually started with the folks that we have relationships with, direct relationships with, and we have solid relationships. Other folks have spoken to Senator Sawyer. So there is this cross communication, mm-hmm. Lots of conversations going on between delegation members. We were up in Raleigh for Advocacy Day about a month and a half ago, and so had really great conversations, had about 90% of the Mecklenburg County delegation was present, where we were able to discuss not just 77, but other issues as well. And so, again, we're always open to discussing with anyone, even beyond our delegation. We recently convened a meeting with chairs across the region here and just talked about working together and our shared interests, and we'll continue to do that.
Paying back your portion and all these other entities' portions of the $60 million already spent on design is not the only monetary threat that I believe is on the table. Could there be other consequences? Could there be funds withheld? Could there be projects stalled? Could there be projects given moved to the head of the line above ours because we made this decision?
I think that's fair to say that it could be, you know, which would really be a shame. I think when you broaden this out and you think about it from a macro level, local communities have to be able to have the authority to make decisions about what's best for their communities and our community. If Raleigh doesn't like a decision that's made at the local level, and we start taking punitive action against, you know, localities because we don't like the decisions that they believe is best for their communities, I think that's a real problem. And that's something where we're going to have to dig in. And, you know, it's probably worth a fight. We cannot allow, I mean, we have to maintain a level of local control, even though we are in a Dillon Rule state. And so there shouldn't be punitive action against localities because Raleigh or certain folks in Raleigh don't like the decisions that we believe are best for us.
For people who don't know, Dillon Rule, it means that the state legislature is supreme. They have the final say on many things in that maybe people think the local government should have the final
right.
say on. What makes us a Dillon Rule state? And can that be, because this keeps coming up, not just this issue, it keeps coming up on a lot of issues. What makes us a Dillon Rule state and can it be changed?
Well, I think that's a great question. I'll leave it to the experts to say exactly if it can be changed or how. I assume it could be changed. I don't know the mechanism to change that. But I think a lot of folks in our community come from other communities that where they have this strong mayor system, and you know they're used to a different approach to government. Obviously, we're a manager-led government. Our board is oversight. Council works the same way. School board same way. And so we are an extension of state government. We can do no more than what they allow us to do. And so that's the way it's been set up, and don't know if it needs to change.
If this project gets voted down, alternatives have to be proposed, because it seems to me congestion's only going to get worse, and we'll talk about that with County Commission Chair Mark Jarrell when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and United Way of Greater Charlotte, celebrating 95 years of impact in the Carolinas, strengthening nonprofits, neighborhoods, and people through the support of charitable contributions. More at UnitedWayGreaterCLT.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is County Commission Chair Mark Jarrell. with the Mecklenburg County Commission, I should say, I guess. And we've been talking about I-77 and the impending decision that all members of CARTPO, the Charlotte Regional Transportation Planning Organization, have to make between now and, I think, October, as to whether or not they're going to reverse their decision, in which they reversed their previous decision to support the I-77 toll lanes. Now they're saying they're not. Mecklenburg County has never been on board, but clearly something has to be done because I-77 has been a choke point on the interstate highway system for some time and even for local traffic for some time. And with our continued growth, it's only going to get worse if we do nothing. You have said, Mark, that no one is saying that we shouldn't address congestion. No one is saying it's not a problem. What we are saying is that we shouldn't be repeating the mistakes of the past. You said that this morning. And we shouldn't be penalized when we have been given false choices. What's the false choice?
Well, the false choice, some of the choices that I think are where people are opposing is, you know, if we're addressing congestion and you have these lanes that basically are for the wealthy, essentially, that's not addressing congestion. That's addressing convenience. And so if it's really going to be about congestion, I think there has to be a different approach. If you go up north today, anybody who's listening that's ridden 77 north, you tell me that that's addressing congestion. There's a parking lot on one side and there's a wide open lane that costs you $30, $40. So that's addressing convenience for those that can afford it. And so, you know, as we take the approach of 77 South, if we really want to address congestion, let us understand all of the options that are available, not just a lane that allows people not to be inconvenienced, and particularly those that can afford it. So we've got to look at congestion comprehensively. We've got to look at it in a way where we're really moving people. And if we know that we're going to be north of 200,000 plus cars on this corridor in the next 20 years or so, you know, let's really address congestion, not convenience.
So do you or anybody on County Commission, or has anyone presented to County Commission a better idea than the one that has been proposed or the ones that have been proposed, an idea that is also realistic in terms of cost?
Yeah, well, I think we're seeing different organizations throughout the community. Sustain Charlotte has chimed in on this. Action and C has chimed in on this. Other organizations have certainly chimed in on this. But, you know, frankly, I'd like to see NCDOT chime in on this, right? It would be great for the experts or for us to have an independent analysis around what are those other options? What can we do to really address congestion, not necessarily take a plan that was baked in 2007 or 2014? If you think about how things have changed since this plan was baked, the world has changed. And so applying something from 2014 to 2026 that will be built in 2036 or finished in 2036, we're going to already be behind the eight ball. We need to get ahead of the curve, make sure we're truly addressing congestion, truly moving people in the fastest growing community in the country. So that is all we're saying. And I would like NCDOT to lean in, and I believe they're having talks and doing what they need to do at this point. So we're here to listen.
Well, that was my next question. Have you or other civic leaders in all these municipalities involved in CARTPO or members of CARTPO had conversations with NCDOT, with House and Senate leaders, with the governor, who I don't think is on board with this particularly, but I'm not sure he can do much about it?
Sure. So there are a lot of conversations going on. I've talked to the governor. I've talked to the secretary. Other leaders have done the same thing. And so to your point, I don't believe the governor is certainly not on board with the punitive action. But again, this solution to this issue is going to take leadership at all levels. And there are a lot of conversations going on right now.
North Carolina Department of Transportation, NCDOT, falls under the purview of the governor's office. Can he do something about this? Either make them not charge you the money, although it's written into law, or force them to come to the table with a better plan.
You know, I'm going to let the governor speak to what his authority is. It seems to be a little hazy around what level of authority that he has. Certainly, NCDOT falls under his purview, but to the extent that he can, reverse what's in the budget that was already signed, I don't even think that that's a possibility.
So there is a 90-day clock on this decision. There's some question about when that 90-day clock began, because it may have begun when the law was written. It may have begun when the law was signed by the governor into law, the budget bill. But I know that that would make it fall somewhere in October for this decision to come down. And on September 23rd, CARTPO is likely to take a vote on this. What are you hearing from other members of CARTPO from other areas like Cornelius? Well, Cornelius is already out of it, but Davidson, Huntersville, Charlotte, et cetera, about what decision they may come to in the light of the need to make this decision now?
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing, there's a lot of concern. This could potentially, the punitive action could potentially just really impact budgets in a way that Mecklenburg County can find ways to absorb that impact. The budget to our smaller municipalities would be really severely impacted. So they've got some real decisions to make. Some tough decisions to make, but I will say this as chair of the board, and I feel like my colleagues would feel the same. You know, we want to do everything that we can to support our towns in helping them navigate this situation and support them with resources, information, and any way that we can help and lean in, we certainly will. We have great relationships with them and we'll continue to help.
Well, Charlotte bears the brunt of this. 42% awaited vote on the council. So their chunk of change would be the largest should this come to pass. And they're one of the towns that fall into Mecklenburg County. I know you can't speak for the city, but can the city afford it?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for the city, but I would assume just being in this space, Mike, that, $30 million hit or whatever that number is, that's so significant that it would certainly adversely impact what they're trying to do.
And this is not the only area that has backtracked on something that NCDOT has proposed in the past. Other areas have changed their minds, and there have been no penalties involved.
Right.
Vicki Sawyer brought this to the table, one of our representatives in the state Senate, and she meant for it to be punitive. Do you understand that?
I don't.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the long arm of the state, because as you mentioned, we are a Dillon Rule state. So the commission has called the move by this state to require payback a power grab. And you have said that we should actually have a say over what's good for us at the local level, and that you wish that that would be respected by others that are outside the community, meaning the House and Senate, and that you would wish that they would listen to the voices of your constituents here in Mecklenburg County. But this is not the only intrusion into local affairs that the North Carolina General Assembly has recently floated. They also want to limit property tax increases. Now, there are a lot of people going, yes, yay, do it. There will be a proposed amendment on the ballot in November amendment to the state constitution that would allow the General Assembly to pass laws limiting how much property taxes can increase. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so to your point, you would have a lot of folks that certainly would support that. We certainly can't support that. And I'll tell you why. 64% of the county's revenue comes from property taxes. So, and we also feel like we are in the best position to understand what the needs of our community are. And so we have very limited levers already. And when you think about it, any limits would really impact the services. If you think about health and human services, if you think about funding for education, our park system, libraries, all of these services that we provide could be adversely and severely impacted. And again, we know that we're in the best position to do this. I mean, Mecklenburg County residents are already footing the bill for unfunded mandates from our state partners. to the tune of $500 million a year. And so to continue to add on to that certainly will adversely impact residents of Mecklenburg County.
To be clear, when you say unfunded mandates, the state is saying you must do this, but they're not providing any money to help you do it, so you have to come up with the money to do that. Is it also true that some of the obligations that the state normally shoulders, like road repair and other services, schools, for instance, are not being funded fully by the state, and therefore the county is already stepping in to fill the gaps?
Without question. I mean, you talk about public education and schools. Certainly, that out of that $500 million, I mean, the 90% of that is funding public education. This is also, you know, we heard from Superintendent Hill not too long ago with talking about the impact of this particular legislation. And currently, the county funds about 700 teachers that this could potentially impact. So when we talk about education, we're talking about the teachers taking a hit. We're going in the wrong direction as it relates to education. You know, we should be funding it at higher levels, not taking away. And we certainly don't need to be taking 700 teachers, you know, out of the equation.
The wording in this constitutional amendment that will be on the ballot in November, when you read it, it just seems open-ended to me. Voters are not voting on capping taxes at any particular set amount. They're giving the General Assembly the power, if they vote yes, they're giving the General Assembly the power to limit or to set a limit at some unknown level somewhere in the future. There is no indication in that proposed amendment to indicate whether this cap would be applied every year or per each property evaluation cycle. There's no indication that counties could appeal the cap or overrule the cap. If residents say they want more services, which you cannot provide with the money coming in and you need to raise the taxes, there's no indication that you can ask if the cap can be removed permanently, temporarily, or in a case-by-case basis. What are we voting on? Is it wise to be voting on something we have no information on?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think it's a brilliant point that this ambiguity that we're dealing with is certainly not advantageous to the voters, and I think it could have some really devastating impacts on, and it's not just Mecklenburg County. Our state association of county commissioners opposes this. It's it's bipartisan. We have Republicans and Democrats alike are aligned in the overwhelming majority of counties. Resolutions have been passed in counties that are majority red and counties that are majority blue. And so we all understand what these implications are, and the public really needs to be educated.
Because Mecklenburg County is a high-growth, high-service, high-debt county, some believe that we would feel the impact of this, if it goes through, more strongly than most of the other counties in the state, and there are 100 counties in the state. But it's also alleged that we weren't the impetus for this proposal. Do you believe that this impact to us, should this pass, is an unintended consequence, or was it a slap at us and maybe Wake County?
It's probably a both and. My understanding in what you've stated is that the impetus may have been, come from other places. But certainly, I think when the way certain partners in Raleigh look at urban counties, I don't think that the lens is dialed in the way we need it to be dialed in. What we contribute to this state, 21% of the economy is driven through Mecklenburg County and by Mecklenburg County residents. The amenities that we provide, everyone gets an opportunity across this state to really come here and benefit from that or go to Wake County. And we feel like we've been great partners for our friends across the state. And it's time for them to show that same level of partnership to us. And we'll continue to drive that message home and to work with them as much as we can. But the punitive actions, we have to stand up against the punitive nature of some of the legislation that we're seeing.
You're a Democrat. The entire county commission is comprised of members who are of Democrats. There's only one Republican serving in local government, and that's Ed Driggs on city council. Everybody else is a Democrat. The Republican, the Republicans, of course, control the legislature, and they have a different point of view about politics and about government. They'd like small government, lower taxes, no taxes if possible, and that's where the legislature wanted to lead the income tax to a 0%. They've already done it for business. But people look at taxes as a burden. But one of the previous county managers many years ago kept stressing taxes equal services.
Right.
So if you limit property taxes, if you limit the growth of property taxes, which are being raised because of the need for more infrastructure because we continue to grow, what happens? What services do we lose? What can't we do?
Well, that's a great question. And when you say what services do we lose, we would have to figure out what the impacts are. We've got a rapidly growing community, but I can tell you what the services that we're statutorily responsible for as it relates to our libraries or education or health and human services, again, our parks, public health is huge. So, you know, we would have to make sure that we can maintain those core services. And at the same time, other ways that the county has been trying to lean in, think about how the county has leaned in with respect to affordable housing, economic development, these issues and efforts around economic mobility where we've made investments, land acquisition. All of these areas would certainly be impacted as, you know, we have more budget constraints. And so, you know, we feel like we are leaning in the places where, you know, that have contributed to this rapidly growing community where people want to be. And, you know, that certainly those areas that I just mentioned would be impacted.
The high growth counties like Mecklenburg and Wake probably have a very different point of view on this than some of the smaller counties. Would that be accurate? I only have 20 seconds. Would that be accurate?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think it's a mixed bag, but I can tell you, again, generally speaking, there's unanimity across our state association around some of the legislation that we've seen.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about budget woes at the county level, about Charlotte's web operations last fall and continuing now, and also about the proliferation of data centers. Stay with us. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Mark Durrell is with us. He's the chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission. We're talking about many things impacting Mecklenburg County. Data centers, Mark, have been spreading like wildfire through cities and towns across the country. At first, they were welcomed and given tax breaks and other incentives. But now, attitudes have begun to shift. And Charlotte, the city of Charlotte, has joined other localities in enacting a moratorium on any new data centers while they study what they do to the environment, to water quality, to water usage, to electricity rates, and other aspects of their operations. In May, the Mecklenburg County Commission began weighing whether to take a position on this debate. Did you reach a conclusion?
Well, you know, we've just received information from staff to understand what our scope would be. And frankly, there's not impact from a county perspective. The city has the majority of that geographic area that where data centers could potentially be even planned. So, you know, we understand that the impacts to the community are, you know, negative in a lot of respects, depending on the level of data center. And so what we want to be able to do is have that information, be able to support the community, make sure that we're educating and providing the right level of information, because, again, people are concerned. A lot of people don't want them in their backyard, and I can understand the reasons why.
Cities have zoning ordinances that they can apply to these facilities. What tools, if any, does the county have?
Well, that's what we were trying to talk through. In the meeting that you referenced, that's what we were trying to figure out. And certainly in the extraterritorial jurisdictions, or also known as ETJ, that's where our scope of authority lies. And so, you know, that's what we're trying to look at. You know, what are those tools that are in our tool belt? We do believe starting with education and understanding the impacts is the right place to start for us.
As with almost everything, there are two sides to this coin. There are those who are very concerned about the rising electric rates driven by these facilities, by their overabundant use of water, the noise pollution that perhaps they create, etc. And so there's an urgency to this on many people's part, but they also are needed. Let's be honest about this. Every single thing we do goes through these data centers today. It's not just big data crunching numbers. It's every time you swipe your credit card. It's every time you stream a Netflix film. This program right now is going through the internet, and people are consuming it that way through data centers across the country. Commissioner Elaine Powell said in May that there is an urgency for the county to take a position, but there's also this urgent need for these digital needs to be taken care of through these data centers. So, as you talk to other people in other parts of the country, has anybody come up with a workable solution to this?
You know, not that I've seen. There's a commissioner out of Loudoun County, Virginia, who has put out a paper. They have the most data centers in the country per capita. And so we get an opportunity to go to different conferences and to connect on topics like this to see how people are addressing them. And I'll tell you, no one has found that silver bullet in the right way to address them. And it seems to me, and talking to colleagues from across the country, that the concerns are certainly rising. We do know that there is a need, to your point, but some of the impacts are certainly very concerning and alarming.
So, ICE operations, speaking of concerning and alarming, ICE operations in Charlotte last fall disrupted the lives of many people in the immigrant community here. 30,000 school children stayed home for days, businesses closed, individuals were apprehended on the streets of Charlotte, in parking lots, at retail locations, often dragged out of their cars and simply taken away. Do we have yet a full accounting for those people who were taken away, where they are, what they've been charged with? Do we know how many people were removed, arrested, confined, deported?
We don't. And I'll tell you, one of the reasons for that is because, you know, this was not an operation where there was coordination with us at the local level. Not only coordination, but any level of communication. Again, when you talk about the impact that this had on the community, there was a physical impact, people living in fear. There's an impact, like you said, an economic impact with businesses being closed. We had residents and citizens being profiled, and it was a very, very sad commentary, and something we don't support.
And it continues. Historically, when the federal government has conducted law enforcement operations here or any other local city, town, or county, have they done so unilaterally, just on their own, with no notification, no communication with local officials, or is it normal practice to read in local officials? We're going to do this, here's why, and here's where we're going to operate.
Well, I think it depends on the administration, but I think the best practice, from what I understand, is that there is this level of coordination and collaboration, with local law enforcement, so everyone is aware of potentially what's going to happen and how things are going to be executed. So you don't have a debacle. So you don't have individuals who are not criminals, being terrorized to a certain extent, and making sure that people are on the same page.
We went through this in October or November of last year, as did Chicago and other cities, and it continues in other cities right now, often with murderous consequences. And I use the word murderous on purpose. It's deliberate because these people often shoot first, ask no questions, and then form the narrative about what actually happened that simply does not conform to what has been captured by many bystanders on video. and they have acted with little or no legitimate reason and often in direct conflict with law enforcement best practices. Do local officials really have no recourse? Can local officials do nothing to stop this? Does the federal government reign supreme?
That's a great question. I would have to defer to legal, but essentially, I mean, from what we saw recently and then, you know, these other cities that you named, there really is, you know, there does not appear to be the level of recourse that people would think.
Well, because the question is that because this has never happened before and people are stunned by this, even officials are stunned by this and they don't know what their options are? Or is it because they really don't want to get in the way and cause more problems? Would it be possible for a jurisdiction to send their police department out and say, no, you're not crossing this line?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question, Mike. That's an interesting
would that
question.
Not be a good, would that not be a good answer to discover?
I think we should discover all options that are available to us for sure. You know, I don't know if there would be a benefit to the community to have a standoff between entities that are both law enforcement entities within the United States of America.
There are those who believe that this use of brutal force against alleged illegal immigrants is really to get Americans accustomed to seeing what are essentially brown shirts or stormtroopers on our streets in advance of the midterm elections. And you can call those people who believe that conspiracy theorists, or you can agree with that assessment. Either way, if you can't stop ICE operations as they have been conducted from a local level, what can local officials do to protect democracy from a rogue federal government in November?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, as someone who represents District 4 in East Charlotte, which was the epicenter of a lot of these operations, you know, we certainly want to continue to support our immigrant community. We want to help educate. We want to provide resources. We want to support those entities that we have partnerships with to really be able to support those communities in a deeper way. And I'll tell you, we have got to make sure that we get the vote out. We've got to make sure people know what's at stake and some of the implications and some of the agendas that are being proposed. We can never allow ourselves to move to a space where this is normal or it's normalized. It's not. I think the board has been very clear that we were against this and we really perceive what happened as wrong.
We could talk about this for an hour, but let's move on. The state finally passed a budget. It took several years for the General Assembly to come to an agreement. And we know that teachers and state employees were waiting and waiting and waiting for raises as that debate dragged on. Did Mecklenburg County suffer any adverse consequences during that waiting period? I mean, was there money promised at the county, et cetera, that was held or didn't come in? Or did you have to make up the difference where other things needed to be funded, but that funding wasn't coming, so you had to fill the gap?
Yeah, you know, I alluded to this earlier, Mike. I mean, it's when you don't have the budget, I mean, there's certainly definitely implications to, you know, other parts of what we're trying to do from a budgetary perspective. And, you know, at this point, you know, we're glad the budget, we do have a budget. Being the only state that didn't have one was, you know, not a good position to be in. We need our teachers to be paid. They still don't have enough. We've got to continue to push to make sure teacher salaries are addressed, particularly those legacy teachers. You know, and so there's still a lot of work to be done. Just having a budget to have a budget is one thing, but really making it substantive is something else.
Teachers at CMS had been waiting for raises with all the other teachers in the state, but the teachers here work in an area where the cost of living is higher than most other areas in the state. Meanwhile, Mecklenburg County's average teacher supplement is the second highest in the state. Will the raise coming from the state take some of the pressure now off Mecklenburg County?
It certainly will take a little bit of the pressure off, but again, like you just mentioned, the cost of living here. So I mean, that is the needle's always going to be moving, and it's still going to continue to move. We go between first and second between us and Wake as far as the supplement's concerned. But anytime the state will come in and add to that, it's going to be helpful. But we're so far behind that we need them to lean in even more.
Funding CMS is the county budget's largest line item, if I'm not mistaken, and you fully funded CMS's recent request. It was a $28.267 million more than the previous year. And it wasn't that long ago that county commission and the school board appeared to be at loggerheads, and the commission expressed reluctance to fund the schools at their requested amount until the schools could show a return on investment, in other words, student performance. Evidently, that was resolved. Would that be correct? And if so, how?
Yeah, so over the last, I want to say it's either 3 or 4 years we actually funded, have fully funded them, and that's, it's come through great relationships. Chairwoman Sneed has been an amazing partner, an amazing leader for CMS. Our managers have had a great relationship with CMS staff as well, and so the collaboration, the partnerships, and really the relationships were actually strengthened through a time that was really difficult. But we've gotten to a really good space where we have open discussion and dialogue and are able to be candid with one another.
The state funds public education based in part on attendance, but they've also made opportunity scholarships available to everybody, and that means they will leave public schools if they take advantage of them and go to private schools. Will that reduce the tax burden for Mecklenburg County or increase it? Because there will be people who cannot use those opportunity scholarships, and if attendance goes down, the schools will be funded at a lower amount.
Yeah, I haven't seen the analysis, around the impact there, but I will tell you that, any money that's coming away from public education is not helpful for us. Those that can afford private schools should pay for private school. I mean, that's just the way it should be. And taking away from public education is not helpful.
You mentioned cooperation and trust between the County Commission and the Mecklenburg County School Board, the CMS School Board. Right now, CMS Superintendent Dr. Crystal Hill is on paid leave pending the results of an investigation. That's all we know. Apparently, that's all she knows, too. At least that's what we've been told. And the best, you, as the chair of the County Commission, do you know what they're looking into?
I know from what I've read, just like everyone else, and so I'm going to leave it to their board to take care of their business.
But you lead the board that just gave them $699 million. Shouldn't you
Absolutely.
know?
Well, like I said, I know what I know what's been reported. I know that they're dealing with a personnel matter that, does not allow me to be read in to the extent that they are read in. And so as their investigation wraps up, we'll learn more and we'll understand, but there's been no negative impact as far as continuity or communication, with my colleagues there. And we'll continue to support them through this and figure it out. But they are responsible for oversight, Mike. And so they're exercising that oversight authority, and we'll support them.
So I only have about a minute and a half, but last year, 6-year-old Dominique Moody died. She'd been in her aunt's custody. She showed signs of abuse and malnourishment at the time of her death. Both CMPD and Mecklenburg County Social Services had received reports about conditions in Moody's home prior to her death, and social services had made home visits. Still, she was left in the home, and as a result of this, I know that several people at DSS have lost their jobs, and the state not only launched an investigation into this, but it also passed the Dominique Moody Safety Act, which establishes a new statewide team to review the most serious child welfare cases across the state. From your perspective, knowing what you know, whether from your own internal discussions or from news reports, how could this have happened? We have 30
You know,
seconds.
I mean, it's heartbreaking. And when you think about it, it can't happen. It can't happen. It shouldn't happen. And I'll tell you, we're going to do everything that we can. We're going to make sure that we're participating in this and get this corrective action plan right and correct. And the law is not only going to be good for Mecklenburg County, but it'll be good for all the counties across the state. Children are our most valued resource.
Mark Terrell is the chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission. Hopefully you'll come back and join us on a regular basis. Thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. Our intern is Emmy Berger. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to visit past episodes, or to sign up for the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.